Hello, and welcome to the Do Gooder Leader interview series, conversations with real leaders about the what and how of leadership in today's world. This is Hannah Cooper, leadership and team coach from hannahcooper.com, and today I'm extremely excited to be here today with Holly Jones. Hello, Holly.
Hey, Hannah. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's really good to be with you, too. So Holly and I met each other like more than 20 years ago when we were doing our master's degree in public health, and both of us have strayed somewhat from that path, though I know we both hold it pretty close in our hearts still. But Holly right now is the YWCA USA Director of Association Services and serves the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast Geographic Network. And she's been in that position for a couple of years. Before that, she had been the YWCA Asheville's executive director for 16 years, which was the longest tenure that that organization, I believe, had in that role, and did a lot of amazing work in that role from really bringing that organization together, making many changes, really positive changes in that organization. And it's been extremely fun to watch her from afar in terms of what she's been up to. In addition to that role, she also, with the YWCA, has also been a local elected official for 13 years, both with Asheville City Council from 2001 to 2008, and is currently a Buncombe County Commissioner, also serving the area surrounding Asheville. So she has a lot of great both nonprofit and political experience. So I'm really excited to hear her thoughts on leadership today. So thank you so much, Holly, for being with me today.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. So tell us just a little bit of yourself. Is there anything else you might want to add on that bio? Or tell us a little bit about the work that you're currently doing, maybe both with the YWCA and frankly also with your work with your political work as well, if you're willing to share.
Absolutely. In terms of the work with the YWCA USA, I feel really fortunate to be in a position to connect with such good work across the Mid-Atlantic and the Southeast, YWs that are ranging from Pennsylvania to Florida, and offer them basically a range of services that could relate to, you know, governance issues or programming issues, evaluation, the whole nine yards. And a lot of times it probably is in sync with some of the work that you're doing as well. It's some coaching In terms of having been there, done that with being a CEO of a local YWCA, it's a small group. It's a small little sisterhood, and that being able to relate to the struggles and the challenges and the victories and the frustrations is really fulfilling, and I think I'm very fortunate to have that position. One of the really cool things that I get to do in my job is I get to work with all the YWs around helping YWs do a better job in local advocacy. Mm-hmm. With our mission of empowerment of women and elimination of racism, part of what we are charging local YWs to do is to think about the public policy arena for an avenue to impact, you know, the mission and to bring about those change in accountability. So I'm working with all the YWs across the country to help build their capacity and make them help them become a more visible presence in their community, have stronger voices, be keener on the issues, and that's incredibly satisfying. And because there's so much work to be done in the policy field around issues of institutional racism as well as gender inequity. So that's an exciting part of my job with the YWCA USA. And once again, I feel like I don't play the lottery, but I feel like I won the lottery on that in that regard. And it really kind of brought some of my interests and skills and backgrounds to the YWCA too. Because as you mentioned, been in the local politics world for, I can't believe it's been, you know, 12 years now. It's crazy. But I've kind of figured a few things out, I think. So, you know, that happens after, you know, a decade or so. And And it's very fulfilling to feel like you're able to kind of share some of your, and sometimes it's wisdom, sometimes you're sharing like, oh, don't do this, I did, and it did not work. So it's, you know, it's your whole life's story that you're able to, hopefully other people can build on, and they can learn from the things that were successful, but they also can hopefully not go down, you know, a path that won't lead to the end that you want. So
yeah,
that's pretty much my work.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you talk about it, it seems like what a perfect fit in terms of, you know, bringing this advocacy approach or, in, you know, working with YWs to look at that role in terms of these big structural issues that are not going to be solved in a day. And when I think about the skills you bring and the kind of background you have, what a great fit in terms of, you know, building that capacity within organizations and then ultimately out in the community. Maybe just because I know a little bit about your path, but listeners won't. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe what's brought you to this work, or what you know, your own path, and what drives you in terms of the work that you do?
My path is in some ways an unusual one, but I think there were very early seeds of wanting to be involved in my community and be a leader for change, seeing issues of injustice or unfairness, kind of pushed a button early on, and I had a great early model for politics. With my dad was a state senator, so I saw him do some great things when he served in the state senate, which in two of the things were beginning public kindergarten. I mean, you know, once upon a time, kindergarten wasn't public. And so I kind of watched that unfold, as well as he was instrumental in developing the emergency services system that we currently have in the 911 system in North Carolina, because once again, once upon a time, you know, it was the funeral homes that would pick up, you know, folks when there was accidents. I mean, it all had to be created, and we forget about those years where there weren't those systems in place. So my early years, I saw what good could come out of, you know, politics, as particularly as it relates to public policy. So I think there were those early seeds that happened, and I was just encouraged along the way in so many realms, from folks in the church or folks in my neighborhood, and had some great opportunities in college and in public health school, and have just kind of followed the, as my husband would say, it's kind of followed the yes path in terms of finding ways to share my passion, as well as, you know, some skills that have been developed.
Mm. Yeah, say more about that, the yes path. What does that mean to you? How have you known when it's the yes path for you?
I think it matches up where you see a match with your what drives you, what feeds you, and then you walk in that direction, as opposed to, I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to put a square peg in a round hole too, and trying to if I think intellectually, this is an arena where I need to be, and by gosh, I'm going to make X, Y, and Z happen. And, you know, when you get in it, you realize that, okay, there's a lot of things in play here, and there's just, you know, wall after wall after wall. And my initial tendency was just to kind of push through them, and sometimes that's appropriate, but what I feel has been more effective recently in the last decade or so are finding the windows of light and gravitating to those. Now, there'll be those challenges and those hurdles along that path too, but finding folks on the path that want to support you, that want to be your allies, that's another important part of the yes path. So just being willing to walk through open doors, as opposed to, you know, stand and knock and knock and knock. But sometimes I knock too.
Well, I think you're hitting on a number of really important parts here. I mean, I find so much that, you know, people people find this work, you know, kind of their passion or their calling, often it's, you know, it does come from a personal story or personal, a personal passion in some way. I mean, I often say for folks working in nonprofit or government, I mean, you know, they're obviously not there for the money, right? So there's, you know, you don't stumble into this. You don't, it's almost like it calls you, right? And sometimes I think those doors open, you know, doors open do open for a reason. And we can spend a lot of time knocking on those closed doors. But I also hear what you're saying here, too, is that importance of really having the people around you. Right, the people who will support you, mentor you, pick you up when you fall down, maybe open some doors for you or point you in the way.
Absolutely.
That we kind of don't have to do it all by ourselves, which is maybe how we might think we have to do it.
And I think that's been one of my biggest lessons in leadership, frankly, is realizing it is, you know, it is a community that is participating in your leadership, and you can have the skills and the drive, but unless you've got folks around you, either A, to lead, or B, that are you know, linking arms with you, at a very minimum, your effectiveness is going to be much less, and lots of times you're just going to flat out fail. I think the thing that I've learned, you know, into it was, and I once again feel like I'm one of the most fortunate people on the planet, because my first job as an executive director, I worked for a board of all women that were fabulous. And I mean, all the stories of nightmare boards of directors, I couldn't relate to ever personally. I mean, I believed people when they would share their stories, but that my situation was diametrically the opposite. I, you know, had these women that were just there to help me succeed. I mean, we were all there for the organization, for the mission, and for the community, but they really embraced me and, you know, kind of would keep me on track and encourage me and also connect me with other folks that would, if they themselves weren't the ones that could open a door or could make a connection or could fix a problem, they would help facilitate who were those people. So that's one of the things I feel that was really important to my what success that I had at the YWCA. I feel like that really initial connection with the broader community and that support just made it all happen.
And how do you find that now, as your roles have changed, or even in your role as a, you know, in terms of working in politics? How do you find that community now?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I've kind of shifted, and you know, kind of crossed the 50-year-old barrier there, and I've been very clear that it's time for me to be much more intentional about being one of those supporters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting ready to, at some point, you know, move over and let folks come forward and, you know, give the seat up, and as it were. So I've been thinking a lot about, you know, how now do I become or move into being one of those women that that help me.
Mm.
So that's part of what's happening. But I and so with that, I'm also, but I need community too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes more effort. And about a year ago, I realized, oh my gosh, I work for an organization that, you know, its mission is the leadership development of women 30 and under, and oh my gosh, where are those women in 30? So they just aren't showing up in my house when I get up and, you know, go to my desk. So I, you know, made a pretty big effort to identify folks in the community, and diverse women from a lot of different backgrounds. And so once a month, I just call it our little women's gathering, and these wonderful women, young women, convene and come to my house, and we just talk and that's the sum total of it. And some really fun and exciting initiatives have come out of that, but there's no agenda. It's mainly just trying to understand, you know, where are their challenges, what are their dreams, and you know, and how can I help in that? I think that's one of my current responsibilities.
Yeah, I think that importance of thinking about, like, how do we create create those spaces where people can come together. You know, and I love what you're saying out too about, you know, seeing that you've been the beneficiary, and how do you also now pass that on? How are you one of the, you know, kind of, for lack of a better word, like elders, right? That
right.
supported you when you were one of those, you know, 30-year-old folks.
Absolutely. I mean, they gave me a chance when I was 34 years old to stretch my leadership wings, and it's important that those opportunities are extended today as well. And I think it's really hard for young women now, harder, because I think, you know, folks are staying in the workforce for so much longer, and so, you know, their time is being delayed, and I just have a lot of empathy for that. That's got to be really frustrating.
Yeah, and I think, and there's such, you know, there's that place of, you know, and what will this generation of people 30 years old in that era, what will they bring to leadership
right.
in terms of their experiences? And, you know, I'm seeing that myself in terms of it's really, there's some of the same styles of leadership are going to continue to hold, and as the world continues to change and the way we work, the kinds of issues we're continuing to work on, what will that new flavor be?
And I completely agree, and I'm really excited about it. I mean, I think that there's so much promise there, and, you know, and frankly, some of the old ways have not been that successful. So, you know, I say, you know, chunk them, and let's try some new approaches. I mean, maybe not all the baby with the bathwater, but I think that what they will be bringing in terms of leadership and collaboration and balance in life and, you know, some of these bigger, I wish those were lessons that I had learned a long time ago. They're they're teaching me. So,
Yeah. You know, I hear I've always known you to be someone, Holly, who makes community and is such a champion for community. And, you know, I know it's a big supporter of, you know, how you've basically done, you know, anything I can think of if you've done in your life has been something you've done in community. Anything else that you would point to in terms of what, you know, what either motivates you or feeds you as a leader?
Well, I do think that connection with I was very fortunate. Again, that seems to be a theme of this talk, but working with the YWCA really heightened my awareness and relationships to some of the challenges that were happening in the community. So I do feel that it was the push to go into elected service, to kind of be able to serve the broader folks in a different way outside of the walls of the YWCA. And I felt like it really grounded me in, you know, what is happening with this mom that's dropping off her child, catching the bus in the morning, dropping her off at childcare at the YW, you know, run into her first job and having to coordinate when they get the call that child's sick. And just to understand those dynamics of folks' lives has been a real motivator for me in terms of trying to address some of these problems and make some lives easier and frankly fairer. So that's always going to be a barrier. That's always going to be a motivator for me, is just the lives of people in my neighborhood and in my community. So that's going to always be the driver for me. And frankly, folks that've got a couple of strikes against them are going to be the ones that I gravitate to as well. I feel like folks that were, you know, they what is it they say that they were born on third and think they hit a home run, and those folks are going to be okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about them.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks that are kind of going through life with a couple of challenges, those are the folks that need champions and need voices, and so that continues to be a impetus for wanting to serve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, equity and fairness is part of what I hear there. Yeah, that drive to what does that really mean to have an equitable and just society?
Yes, that's the driver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious because you've had so many successes, so many things that you've really championed, highlighted, great organizational success, moving things forward both on a organizational and policy level. But as you think back, you pointed this a little bit a while ago, but is there anything else that you think about if you could rewind,
mm-hmm.
is there anything you would do differently in terms of how you've, in your career, some of these lessons you've learned? Is there anything you would do differently if you could advise your, your 34-year-old
mm-hmm.
self or maybe a 34-year-old who's listening to this today?
Well, I think that's a really important question for us all to kind of think through. And I, in the big decisions of, I'm going to take this job or I'm going to go to this school or I'm going to live in this neighborhood, which incidentally I think is a very big question that everybody should wrestle with. I wouldn't change any of those. I wouldn't change any of those big moves. Now, how I live those decisions, there's a lot I would do differently. First and foremost, I would take things a lot less seriously and live a little more lightly. I think, part of that drive for justice and equity, it can just be so heavy all the time. And,
yeah.
I would like to have some redos on some of that stuff. There's definitely a little bit of scorched earth on my part to get to the other side. And I think another thing I would do differently is I would remember. I don't think I understood how closely people were connected early on, and paid more attention to those connections among other folks. I think that would have been a really important, I'm doing it now, but I think the earlier that folks can start understanding how people are connected to each other, I think the more beneficial it is. I think the more you'll understand about your community, and I think you're also less likely to step in it. So that would be another big thing that I would do differently.
Like, give an example about Holly. What do you mean by that when you say how people are connected to each other?
Just the simple relationships.
Mm-hmm.
who taught who in school and lives beside each other in the
right.
neighborhood and sits beside each other in church and
right.
Because when you come, and I came into this community in Asheville, I didn't know one person.
Right.
I knew zero people. And so you're having to do a lot of assessments, so you don't know the people's history, and you don't know that be it good or bad, be it bad. And so it's important to. You don't want to be dominated by other people's stuff, but I found that just kind of knowing these dynamics can really make life a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
so that kind of informal social network and like how it actually really runs.
Right.
What's happening maybe, not necessarily always, on that organizational level.
Exactly. Yeah, because
mm-hmm.
I would just want to get down to business a lot and just to kind of, here's the problem, let's fix it. And it's important to realize the kind of human connections in all
mm-hmm.
that too. So that's an approach I would do a little differently.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's something that I often, I think about or I talk about with, certainly with teams that I work with is that, my own belief is that the world runs on relationships. I mean, even look how we're doing this call today, right? I called you to do this call because I've known you for a long time, and I've been inspired by, again, watching you from afar since we don't obviously live in the same community. But, I think that's, my own realization that pretty much everything that's every piece of work I've ever had in my life, from, my first babysitting job to, frankly, this phone call was because of, somebody opened a door for me, somebody said something nice about me, somebody trusted me or was willing to take a risk on me. And that comes just from, not because even I'm like the biggest extrovert in the world, to be honest, but just because of the nature of the relationships that I was able to make, or that someone was, again, willing to kind of give me a break. And I think about some of the things you're talking about in terms of even equity and justice is that, I, like you, I've had a lot of really, I've been very lucky and very blessed in my life, and that's not necessarily true for everyone else. So how can we start becoming the ones who open those doors?
Absolutely, yes. And I think it's imperative that we all do our part wherever that is. Yes.
Anything else, Holly? I mean, this has been such a great conversation. I know we could go on forever, but we both have other things, and I'm sure people on this call do too. So people listening to this call. But is there anything else you would want to say in terms of either advice or thoughts to someone else who might be starting out in sort of their world in terms of, or their career in terms of social justice or advocacy, politics, nonprofit or government work? Either somebody starting out, even broadly in their career, or even specifically as they're taking on leadership roles.
I think about that a lot with these conversations I'm having with my younger colleagues, and the handful of things that keep rolling through my head are not necessarily specific to any of those realms that you indicated,
yeah.
in a nonprofit or the government or whatnot. They're kind of human being things. But they are so important in those realms, and one of them is just listening is so important. I think in politics particularly, it's really interesting to see how powerful just not talking is, and how that's what people want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be talked at. They want to be heard. So listening is just so fundamental. Perfection is not fundamental at all, and I've never been a real perfectionist, and I'm glad about that. And I actually think that's part of why I've had some success along the way, is that it did not have to be an A+ all the time, and I'm glad about that. my daughter is a perfectionist, and her teacher actually made her learn a phrase, and she hates the phrase, and it is, remember, perfection is the enemy of done. And I think that's important in the, if you're in a leadership position, you want to let go of some stuff, and you want to be ready to compromise because you want to keep the big goal out there. And perfection is not helpful in that realm. And the last thing I would say, and I do think this is important for anybody going on an interview or in whatever realm, is I think the more that you know yourself, your shadow side, your strengths, but the whole realm of who you are, the better you're going to do your job, the better you're going to follow your call. You'll know when you're in over your head and you need to pick up that phone and ask somebody and get to a better place. And you'll know, I got this. I'm confident, and I'm pushing forward. So I think, and that's we're all going to be learning that till we go to the other side, right? So that's not anything that you ever accomplish completely. Right. But I think being very intentional about that is super important. I would always, when I'd interview people for jobs, I wanted to hear what that they knew what they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect people to know everything, but I did expect them to have an awareness of when they were, you know, out of their league or outside their comfort realm, and what they would do at that moment. So, mm-hmm. and it just comes to knowing your strengths and knowing your weaknesses. So,
mm-hmm.
and some famous philosopher said something about know that.
I think you're right. I don't know who, but that's actually right. Well, and what I hear in that, and, you know, just even circling back up to what you said earlier about the yes path, you know, at least from what I see and observe, and, you know, frankly, I think it's a lot about what a coaching approach towards leadership is kind of all about, is kind of what do they say? Was it know to thyself be true? Is that it? Something like that.
I think that is exactly the phrase.
But I think it's the whole thing of, like, yeah, you have to, it all kind of start, it starts from you. Right, which is, again, part of the reason why I wanted to do these interviews is, at least for me, I think hearing people's stories, knowing how people have come to that place of understanding what motivates them, what their gifts are, what they want to bring to the world, it's intricately tied to how you want to lead and how you want to show up in the world and what you want to see be different or more. And we, you know, the more we can know what that is for us, then we can actually take that into the world and, you know, and express those gifts and all that kind of good stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
I love that.
So smart.
I love that. That's a part of what you know yourself already to be true. So very cool. Well, Holly, thank you so much for taking this time and having this chat with me. I'm you know, truly I have seen you as a hero and a champion out there for a long time, and so it's just really a treat just to get to be able to hang out and hear some of your thoughts on this, and I'm sure it's going to be really beneficial to people listening to this too. So
The pleasure was all mine. I so appreciate what you're doing and the opportunity to connect.
Well, thank you so much. So again, this is Hannah Cooper from hannahcooper.com, and we've been talking with Holly, the amazing and talented Holly Jones. And this is the Do Gooder Leadership interview series, and please continue to check these out and other resources on my website at www.hannahcooper.com. All right. Thanks, Holly, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.